Thank you. As you mentioned, Commissioner, my name is Joanne Cummer. I'm the Administrative Law and Human Rights Section Solicitor at the Law Institute of Victoria. On behalf of the Law Institute of Victoria, we'd like to thank you for this opportunity today to appear at this hearing to speak to our submission and answer questions. Just to give you a quick background on the Law Institute, it's a professional association for Victorian solicitors. The IAV has a membership of over 12,000 members, with the vast majority of those members being in practice. We represent our members' interests and work to improve the law so that it better serves a changing society. The Law Institute aims to increase public understanding and a respect for the law and legal process while encouraging full participation in the profession by all of its members. In relation to the inquiry, the LIV set up an ad hoc working group with members comprising solicitors and members from the Workplace Relations section, the Administrative Law and Human Rights section, Family Law section, and also the Young Lawyers section. And together they worked to prepare the submission that we sent off to the HERIOC for its inquiry. I might hand over to Lee Johns just to go through, just briefly speak to our submission and the LIV's position.
Sure, thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you. And Commissioner, I join Joanne on behalf of the Law Institute in thanking you for this opportunity to speak to our submission at the inquiry today. It is the hope of the Law Institute that this inquiry will assist in addressing systemic discrimination against same-sex couples and their children. The Law Institute's position, as stated in its paper, is that it very much supports the principles of non-discrimination and equality before the law, as set out in Articles 2 and 26 of the ICCPR. We submit to the inquiry that all laws should apply to all persons equally and benefit all persons equally, and it's our hope that through this inquiry we'll be able to identify those laws where that doesn't occur, and your recommendations can remedy that. The area of same-sex relationships does involve systemic discrimination in the areas that are being considered by the inquiry, and to that extent the Law Institute submission goes to matters such as superannuation, tax concessions, the Medicare levy, workplace relations, family law issues, migration law and veterans issues. I won't, in my submission, Commissioner, go to each of those matters, but will want to touch upon in particular workplace relations, which is a particular interest of mine in my practice area as a practitioner. We note in an encouraging way the high number of submissions which have been made to the inquiry, some 350 or so, and we note in particular a common theme from those submissions that there seems to be, in our view, a consensus that discrimination against same-sex couples and children ought to be removed and they ought to be accorded equal rights before the law. And we're very encouraged by the number of submissions which go to that that have been lodged with you, sir. The LIV strongly supports the inquiry reporting into these matters. And if I now go to the genesis of the submission made by the Law Institute, and it is that our main recommendation is that the federal government amend the definition of spouse under all federal legislation so that it includes same-sex couples. There seems to us to be possibly three options. There might be more, sir, but the first option would be to widen the definition of spouse to include same-sex couples. A second option might be to change the legislation so that it refers to spouses and domestic partners, and a third option might be to remove references to spouse altogether and just rely upon domestic partnerships, which is similar to what's been done here in Victoria. Our submission prefers the first option, which is widening the definition of spouse to include same-sex partners. And we say that with that simple legislative amendment, many of the areas of discrimination which have been highlighted in our submission would be removed. And it seems to me, having sat through the submissions this morning, sir, that that is consistent with a number of those other witnesses who gave evidence before you. The LIV is also concerned about the inconsistent approach to same-sex couples and their families under various state and federal laws, and we welcome a federal intervention to regularise that. so that we can have a national standard and a national approach to anti-discrimination in this area. I might just hand back to Joanne, who's going to talk about some statistics, and then it'll come back to me.
Sure.
We've noted some ABS statistics, and we didn't include these in our submission.
Sorry, so it's some
Australian Bureau of Statistics.
Oh, ABS.
ABS.
I wasn't sure if you said ABS or ADF. We've been talking a bit about the Australian Defence Forces, and I had ADF in
mind. No problem. And we note that same-sex couples have been enumerated in the in census data in 1996 and 2001, but they weren't. The question didn't arise directly in this year's census.
No.
But between those years, the ABS have noticed a doubling of same-sex couples counted. From in 1996 had been 10,000 to 20,000 in 2001. And we feel it's sort of reasonable to suggest that the figure would be significantly higher in 2006. But also the ABS notes that there are some limitations to the data in terms of the way in which people answer questions, and that those figures may not actually accurately reflect a number, in that it may be a higher number.
So you think there's significant underreporting?
Potentially, and I think the ABS suggests that.
Yes.
And it's interesting in itself that the question isn't posed as a standard question in the census. So while that's not within the inquiry's terms of reference, we could add that as well, that it's obviously something that's identified and selected on, placed on a selected basis in the census. So the federal government's amendments to the Marriage Act clarify that marriage means a union between a man and a woman. We suggest it should not provide a barrier to the recognition of same-sex couples in other areas of life, work and finances. And we just felt that these statistics, that it's not an insignificant group of people that this discrimination is applying to.
Yeah, the lack of good stats makes it very hard both for us and government to do costings on things, I have to say. But
indeed.
Yeah.
And further to that, how many of those same-sex relationships have children, families?
Yes.
Commissioner, that then maybe brings it to my turn again. And just to amplify some of the matters which have been raised in the Law Institute submission, I wanted to record a personal story which might illustrate those, and it's different to some of the stories that you've heard this morning. Commissioner, in the Age this morning, there's a report that our state Liberal leader, Ted Baillieu, agrees with the Prime Minister that all children, all things being equal, ought to have the opportunity to have both a mother and a father. Well, my daughter has two mothers and two fathers. I'm a gay man in a same-sex relationship, and I co-parent with two lesbians. And the laws as they are currently written discriminate against us in some ways, and I want to highlight those to you this afternoon. Unlike Janet Jukes and her partner who spoke to you this morning, we don't have court orders in place to recognise the non-biological partners who are parents of our daughter. We have a document which is an agreement which details a whole range of things in respect of our daughter's life. In the instance that there would be a separation between the couples, there might be difficulties for, in particular, the non-biological parents of our daughter in establishing rights in relation to our daughter. There are three issues that I want to touch upon, those relating to personal carers leave, compassionate leave, and parental leave. And I submit, sir, that what ought to be the governing principle in relation to all of these matters is what is in the best interests of the child. And it shouldn't be seen in terms of necessarily the interests of the parents, whether they be non-biological or not, but what is in the best interests of the child. And if I can turn to personal carers leave, section 244 of the Workplace Relations Act says that it is available and to be taken by an employee to provide care or support to a member of the employee's immediate family or a member of the employee's household. Now, as the biological parent of my daughter, I am able to access personal carer's leave to look after her in the event that she is ill. However, my partner, who is a non-residential parent and a non-biological parent of my daughter, would not be able to access those carer's leave provisions. Now, there might be circumstances where, notwithstanding the fact that my daughter has many parents, I might be interstate, her mum's might not be able to take leave from their work, and my partner would be denied the opportunity to care for my daughter under those carer's leave principles. That is not in the best interests of my daughter, that she could not be cared for by someone who she considers to be her parent. A similar form of discrimination in that regard arises in relation to the definition of compassionate leave, which is under section 257 of the Workplace Relations Act, and it provides for leave when there is personal illness or injury that poses a serious threat to the life of someone who is a member of someone's immediate family or the employee's household. In those circumstances, God forbid my daughter was ever in those circumstances, but if she were, my partner, who is a non-residential and non-biological parent, would not be able to access compassionate leave. And that is clearly not in the best interests of my daughter. And it is that type of discrimination that ought to be removed from the Workplace Relations Act. And the final example, sir, is in relation to the definition of paternity leave. And there's a guarantee there in section 282 of the Workplace Relations Act, and it provides for short paternity leave, unpaid leave of up to 1 week taken by a male employee within the week starting on the day his spouse begins to give birth. Under that definition, my employer at the time of my daughter's birth could have denied me, her biological father, the opportunity to take short paternity leave. That is an unacceptable form of discrimination. At the time of my daughter's birth, I worked for an enlightened law firm, Mallison, Stephen, Jakes, and they gave me paternity leave without blinking. But we live in a society where not all employers are so enlightened, and there ought not ever be a circumstance where a father can't spend that short paternity leave on the birth of their child. That discrimination exists within the Workplace Relations Act, and it's our fervent hope that this inquiry will make recommendations to remedy that. If the Commission has questions of the Law Institute submission, we're more than happy to answer.
Thank you. We do have some questions. You talk about the definition of spouse and introducing that into federal law. Do you have a view as to whether it would be better to change the definition in each piece of legislation or simply clarify the meaning of spouse in the Marriage Act?
It seems to me, sir, a preferable situation to just clarify the definition. But we are, of course, alive to the political realities, and that may not be achievable. And that's why I think, sir, as a fallback position, we propose the legislation might refer to spouse and domestic partner, as opposed to redefining spouse in that context.
Could you achieve the same result in the Institute's view by inserting a broad definition of interdependency in the in federal legislation?
So that might be possible, but it's not preferable. We ought not have same-sex relationships disguised or hidden in that way, and though it might achieve the same outcome, it's very important for government to say that we aren't ashamed of these relationships. We recognise them. They are equally valid. They are equally valid in terms of their love, care and support, and for their ability to care for children. And we don't hide them through a definition of interdependency.
Do you have a view as to whether it would be better to use the term de facto spouse or domestic partner instead of redefining spouse? You've sort of answered this question to a degree in order to eliminate the distinction between the two.
I think it might be seen as a cascading order of preference. You might redefine spouse. If that wasn't achievable, you'd redefine de facto spouse, and if that wasn't achievable, let us have domestic partnerships.
You've talked about the interdependency visa categories or category, and you recommend abolition of that and advocate an extension of the de facto visa to same-sex couples. Are the differences in the two types of visa in terms of qualification for the visa and also the entitlements that come with the visa related to your views or the comments that you've already made in terms of comparing those two concepts, or are there other factors which ought to be taken into account in that particular instance?
If I may answer that question,
sure.
Commissioner. I think in our submission it's highlighted that it should be abolished and rolled into the spouse, or it's a partner visa category, I think is the correct term. In the sense, based on the idea that it shouldn't be a separate visa category for two people in a genuine and ongoing relationship, which is the which are the legal requirements for a spouse or a partner visa, that again, sort of supporting what Lee was saying, that you shouldn't disguise those relationships, genuine relationships, under another guise. The government should be able to they should be recognised equally.
You propose a civil union relationships recognition scheme. Are you advocating adoption of the Tasmanian model, or are you looking for the type of union proposed by the ACT? And what do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of the two models?
The advantages of the ACT model, and in our submission we note with regret the action taken by the federal government in relation to that legislation passed by a territory. The advantage of the ACT system is that you can create the relationship through a civil union, and the Tasmanian system enables you to go and register a relationship, and there is a significant distinction to be made between the two, and it's our preference that the ACT model ought to be adopted, but of course we would not oppose a registration scheme like that in Tasmania.
Okay. Do you think that de facto heterosexual couples should also be entitled to register a civil union? Not sure.
Yes.
Any view about that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Nice, easy answer.
Well, what we say, Commissioner, is there ought not be any difference.
Sure. Yeah.
But between.
That's what I thought you would say.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, as Mr. Gardner said earlier this morning, it's about a mutual commitment to a shared life.
Yes.
And that is what we ought to recognise.
Yes.
Regardless of gender.
Yep.
And sexuality.
And in fact, that would. That would make less complicated some of the issues around de facto relationships for heterosexual couples.
Yes, we share that view.
Yeah.
And the reality of relationships in 2006 and beyond is that people are not necessarily getting married. They're choosing different means to live together and share their lives together without having that formally recognised by the union of marriage.
Okay, well, let me come to Victorian legislation now. You note that Victorian law reform has improved equality for same-sex couples with the concept of domestic partner, but you say there's still much to be done to achieve equality. What more do you think needs to be done in the area of financial and work-related entitlements, particularly? And I'd be particularly interested in your comments in relation to the Administration and Probate Act. But I don't want to restrict your broader comments, so, you know, if you've got other issues that you want to raise, please do.
So we highlight in section 11 of our submission those remaining difficulties in relation to wills and intestacy, and those matters have also come before you during the course of today, but the concerns remain in relation to the difficulties of a surviving domestic partner improving their relationship with the deceased in the absence of formal documentation or other public acknowledgement of the relationship. And that goes to the issue of having a registration scheme and the need for that at a state level, which is not dissimilar to the registration scheme that would exist in that does exist in Tasmania. It would solve those problems if there was such a registration scheme.
What are the weaknesses, if any, that you see in the way Victoria has gone about its law reform? And I mean, looking for learnings that may be relevant to our recommendations, have there been any problems with the use of domestic partner, the concept of domestic partner, or are there other issues that you might flag?
The problems with domestic partner, sir, if you, we might take that question on notice. It's not one that we've covered in our submission, and I'm through the workplace relations section or my other involvement in the Law Institute aren't aware of those problems.
Sure.
It seems to me that the process of law reform adopted by the Victorian Government in this regard was a very good one, and an exemplary model. It was one that canvassed, as does this inquiry, views from a whole range of different people, and it aimed to, and I think did, build a consensus around change, that some of the people who were advocating for this type of change in years gone by might never have imagined possible. And to the extent that your inquiry, sir, is travelling around the country and being very transparent in its processes, like those of the Victorian Government, it's to be encouraged.
Okay, thank you. I'm turning now to family law issues. You recommend that the Federal Government accept state referrals regarding the Family Law Act to cover same-sex and heterosexual couples. Have you seen any written reasons why the government will not do so, and are you involved in any advocacy regarding that issue?
We've not seen reasons why the government hasn't accepted the referral in relation to same-sex couples. It doesn't make sense to us. In our view, that referral ought to be accepted by the federal government. It's certainly been offered by the State Attorney General, Rob Hulls, for quite some time now. It would alleviate a number of concerns and issues, particularly when a relationship dissolves. If, for example, my relationship were to dissolve, there might be difficulties for my partner, who, as I say, is the non-biological and non-residential parent of my daughter, in terms of access and the like. We have, in our agreement, countenanced what would happen in those circumstances. He would continue to be recognised as a parent equally with the other three of us. But there might be circumstances where there's not such a consensus or cohesion about how these matters are dealt with, and they ought to be able to be dealt with by the family court or the federal magistrates court. And they ought to be dealt with always and consistently on the basis of what is in the best interest of the child. And it might be, and it indeed would be, in the best interest of the child to have a continuing parental relationship with an adult whom she considers to be her parent, notwithstanding that they're not biological and not residential.